Hello, everyone. This is Connie Morgan with the Free Black Thought Podcast. Today's guest is Chris Williams, a.k.a. K-Dub. He is a rap artist known for clean music like this.
They gon' call me coon, but I'm still staying calm. Your insults, it won't do. Tell Biden I am black. He was straight whack for that. And to those who agree, black ain't no ideology. I hate slavery. I hate segregation. Love being black, homie.
And he is an online apologist, both projects falling under his brand, All Things Theology. But Chris came onto my radar for neither reason, rather because he has an amazing story of rescuing a couple of young ladies from a burning car and an accident that very well could have been fatal had Chris not stepped in a display of healthy masculinity. In this episode, we talk about what it means to be a man, his faith journey, and how adoption has changed his life for the better. Just truly a wholesome episode that I hope inspires you, because remember, there is no such thing as a black perspective, just black people with perspectives.
The number you have dialed.
You're listening to the Free Black Thought Podcast.
Chris, thank you so much for joining me here today on the Free Black Thought Podcast. You are someone I truly discovered online, and we'll get into that, but I'm just, you know, people like to talk crap about the internet all the time. There's a lot of problems with the internet, but there's a lot of wonderful things about the internet too, and one of those wonderful things is that Free Black Thought kind of discovered you through Twitter and a big event in your life that we'll get into. But first, can you please just give the audience your kind of like the short and sweet of your life story? Where did you grow up? How were you raised? And how did you land to where you're at today?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It truly is my pleasure to come on to Free Black Thought and discuss a variety of topics. Well, like you said, my name is Chris. People call me K-Dub. That's generally because of my music that I've done. But I was born in Louisiana, grew up in Texas. One of the best decisions my mom ever made was doing that. But, you know, we grew up single mother household. Mom had us in church every Sunday. Just quiet kid. I mean, really your classic single mother, boring kid. I mean, I love sports. And so
did you have siblings?
I have three brothers. Ooh. And so, yeah, we wrestled a lot. We got in trouble, you know, mainly in the household, not outside the home. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pretty typical, you know, non-exciting childhood, you know, nothing crazy really happened. But yeah, my mom is a huge influence on my life. You know, even from that single mother household.
What kind of church theology were you raised in?
Totally different than what I was ascribed to now. Very charismatic, very like word of faith. God's going to bless you if you do this for him, you mm-hmm. know, kind of theology. You know, Joel Osteen, Creflo Dollar, T.D. Jakes kind of stuff. I can remember that playing on the car rides. And, you know, I really never wanted anything to do with God outside of like, God helping me score 10 touchdowns in a football game, you know, like, I'll believe in God if you do that, you know, but God as some kind of moral figure, I didn't want anything to do with that God, you know. I hated going to church. Church was like, church better provide two things for me, either a girlfriend or food, you know, otherwise I had no desire to go. You know, I remember just being dragged to church. You know, I even though the theology was bad, I do appreciate my mom for kind of instilling those values and dragging me to church, you know, because otherwise I probably would have been getting into trouble and all sorts of mess, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so as you grew up, what came after high school? Did you, when your mom was no longer making you go to church, did you fall away? And then did you go to college? Did you get a job? Did you join the military? What came after high school?
Yeah, so I played a year of college football, and, you know, that was an interesting perspective because first time away from home really led to a depression. Mm. I just started divulging into, you know, partying, and I just was depressed being away from home. And like, I realized I didn't want to even play football anymore, which like for me was like a crazy thought because that's like all I've done. That was my escape. You know, sports was my escape.
Yeah.
Not having a father figure and issues in life. And it was at that moment I really believe that God started drawing me to himself. And I was 19 when I became a Christian. And so that was interesting too. So, yeah.
Can you talk about how you define that, becoming a Christian? Because everyone defines it differently. And they might be who's like, you said you went to church. How did you just become a Christian when you were 19?
Yeah. Well, I really started desiring the things that the Bible talks about for the first time. I started desiring to read my Bible. I didn't want to, even though there was a struggle with sin, I started realizing I didn't want to be at the parties and doing what everybody else was doing. I truly repented ultimately, you know, what the Bible talks about. I had a true change of mind. I started going to church joyfully, you know, for the first time. You know, it was a complete like 180. Like the things I, you know, growing up was like, man, this is boring. Like I enjoy listening to preaching, you know, like just seeing what the Bible had to say about, you know, and I was being convicted about things for the first time. Like it was, man, I know you know about this, you know, but it's like, you see what the Bible says Christians to desire? I'm like, hey, that's me, you know, like, yeah. You know, as opposed to like, man, I'm like, man, I hated these things growing up. And I, you know, so it was totally God's sovereign grace that, you know, why I became a Christian, because I grew up in it and had wanted nothing to do with it, you know, for most of my life, you know, when I was 19, you know.
What kind of church did you end up at then when you were 19? Did someone invite you? Did you just stumble upon an awesome church? You hit the Google button?
No, this is, so remember, I'm 19. I don't know much about the Bible. So I just go to the church that, you know, when I was like in the youth group, right. I was going to. So I just go there and this is why I say, you know, God is truly in control. You know, he's sovereign, even in that, because it was not a good Bible teaching church. It was, you know, still the grab it, blab it. God's going to bless you if you pay 10% of your money kind of yeah. stuff, you know? And so, you know, I'm reading my Bible and I'm like not seeing this stuff in the Bible. And I'm starting to question some of these things, you know, though I'm pretty like introspective and quiet, like naturally, I'm pretty like, you know, inquisitive as well. And like, if I don't see something, I'm going to like say something. You can't just tell me something and I'm like, just go with it, you know? Yeah. And so I started questioning some of these things. At the same time, I had a gentleman who started discipling me and he was teaching me stuff. And I was like, hey, my church doesn't teach that, you know, like, wait, what's going on? Like but the funny thing is he never like told me your church is a false church. Like
he let you figure it out.
Yeah, he really did. And I was like, I think my church isn't teaching what the Bible is saying. It was like a crazy, like realization to come to that conclusion on my own. And just, you know, I started questioning these things, and long story short, I just started reading the Bible and started seeing churches that were teaching what I was seeing in the Bible, and, you know, started listening to people that were, you know, what I now come to know as a Reformed theology is, you know, I first came a hold of Steve Lawson, Vody Balcom, and John MacArthur. And I was just like, okay, this is what I'm seeing in the Bible,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so God was good in that whole process to me.
So as a guy who was raised by a single mom, and then eventually, I mean, in God's perfect timing, right? You found that mentor, the person that was discipling you. How did you find him? I mean, I think for me, I struggled for a long time to find mentors and people to disciple me and lead me. And probably there's a lot of folks out there who are like, I would love for someone to come walk alongside me and teach me and help me. How did you find him?
Totally wasn't looking for it. Didn't know I needed it. It's one of those things where literally God dropped it in my lap, because I wouldn't have known that I need. It's one of those things where it's the Kruger-Dunning effect. I thought I knew a lot about the Bible until I got around people who knew the Bible, and I was like, yeah, I really don't know anything, right? You know. But I literally was at a restaurant. I was at IHOP, you know, the pancake place, and literally met this guy. Wow. And like when I say I wasn't looking for it, it probably shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have. Like I wasn't. And next thing you know, found out he did music. He was an older gentleman at the time, I think upper 30s. And that's how we first connected. And next thing you know, like he invites me over his house. I'm like thinking we're about to like collab on a track. And he's like, pulls out his Bible. I'm like, hey, what are we doing here? You know, but it was in my young zeal thinking like it was totally what I wasn't expecting, but it was everything I needed.
Yeah.
You know, to have someone way more mature than me who had wife, kids, things I didn't want growing up. I didn't want to get married.
Yeah.
I probably wanted kids, but it was like for that selfish reason of like, I want them to play football like I did, you know, and it's like, that's totally not important.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, it was just someone I just got to see someone like their life for the really the first time, like be happy with their wife, even with the heartache and sin. Mm-hmm. And like, I just saw his life and it was like, I was like, man, for that first time, I like truly dig in my Bible and study and also like be married.
Yeah.
Which what I never wanted that before I became a Christian, mm-hmm. you know, even like as an initial Christian, that was still like a struggle. I never really thought of that. And so seeing his life, which is like truly discipleship, you see every aspect of this person's life. They're not just teaching you things, but they're showing you,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw how to become a man, you know, and that it was truly a blessing, you know.
What would you advise to a young man in particular who maybe was also raised by a single mom and just is struggling to find that kind of male mentorship? How can they find it? I mean, obviously the church is a great place, but even that can be overwhelming. Like, do I just start walking up to dudes and say, hey, you seem like you have it together. You want to mentor me?
Funny enough, and not as like a blunt way as that, but maybe so.
Yeah.
Like, I would say, look into your life and see people who that obviously no one has it together, right? No one's fully, right, reached that level.
Mm-hmm.
But see people who you desire and aspire to be like. See what they're doing, you know, attach yourselves to them in some kind of way to where like, hey man, I mean, it doesn't have to be formally said like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But just attach yourself to them. Right. And I would say like people who are older and mature should be looking for younger people.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just a one way street, but if you're older and mature listening to this, like find a younger man who is discipleable,
right?
You know, who's willing to learn, who's willing to, you know, be taught.
Mm-hmm.
And, attach yourself to them. And so I would say it's like that two-way street.
Yeah. Yeah. So what came next then? You're 19, you're growing in your faith and your wisdom. Did you stay in college and finish it out? Did you go do something else? What happened then?
I am a college dropout, you know, proud college dropout. No, I really was in college because of football.
Yeah.
I literally did not know what to do. I mean, everybody, you know, that's kind of like what you're told. Hey, you know, after high school, you got to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that was the worst thing for me. If I could go back, I'd probably either do military or trade school.
Yeah.
Probably trade school, because that's when around 2008 was like when everything was like jumping off with like the war.
Surges,
so I probably would have done that. Yeah. So I probably would have just gone trade school and like been like 22 and like making $50,000. That sounds pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 50, 60
mm-hmm.
as a 21-year-old. But yeah, I dropped out and pretty much I'm just working little jobs here and there. I'm really not doing anything, I guess, extravagant. I mean, and then when I became 24, I met my now wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got married when I was 25.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, really from 19 to 25, I'm just working little jobs here and there and going to church and, you know, just the mundane, simplistic life,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But now you have this platform. So can you tell us a little bit about that and why you started it?
Yeah. So it's funny. I have friends who are like wanting to grow their platform. They're like, man, how'd you do it? I'm like, I have no clue, man. Like, don't ask me. I'm not the, well, you do this and then the numbers, you know, I just like literally just started putting out content and people started either following me on Twitter or subscribing on YouTube. Well, first and foremost, like a lot of my content started, especially on YouTube, started to, I guess, arise because I was putting a lot of like evangelism content out.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I think got, I guess, popularity, air quotes, I guess how I got a little popular. I was just having conversations and just going out and sharing my faith and defending it, because not to say it wasn't happening, but I wasn't seeing much of it from younger people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted it really to be an encouragement. There was no like desire to like, oh, when I release this, it's going to go viral,
right. You
know? And like, you know, I mean, I still kind of feel like that way. Like the content I put out is because I think it's good. And I mean, if it does well, cool. If it doesn't, hey, it's all right.
Yeah.
Like if
a
couple people learn from it, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Did you start on YouTube or was it Twitter first or somewhere else?
I probably started on YouTube. And I really what felt like got me going on Twitter was because of addressing a lot of social issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like in 2015, right, you had a lot of this stuff kind of rising out. And I really didn't know where I stood about these issues until I started getting challenged about them.
Mm.
I had no one to like listen to, essentially. I had to navigate some of this stuff on my own. And right, that's always a dangerous thing, you mm-hmm. know, especially if, you know, you're unequipped to, you know, especially, you know, single mother household. And so I literally didn't know how to address some of these things. And I don't know what like got me to, I guess, be more conservative in my thinking or versus what quote unquote woke. Right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just saw some of the stuff maybe I was taught growing up or I guess had imbibed from the culture were not accurate, you know, Black people being targeted, right? And like some of these certain things that I probably held to were not as accurate, right, as my even in my experience told me. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, that was interesting. So I think that's how I kind of got, I don't know, popular. I still feel like a little guy, you know, on Twitter, but that's how I guess started getting popular on Twitter.
So were you like publicly changing your stance on social issues as like, you know, when you first started speaking, you thought this, you know, you thought maybe Black people are targeted by the police or whatever. And then over time you changed your mind or did you have like kind of a niche issue that you talked about?
So it wasn't like I was known for being woke. Cause like it just kind of was like something probably naturally embodied my body. Like, right. The white man is out to get mm-hmm. you, but it wasn't like I was like talking like that on yeah. social media. Okay. Right. It was just like, but I remember, so a lot of like, especially in Christian circles, like I started hearing like people try to buy, you know, this Christian critical race theory, like mm-hmm. in the church. And I'm like, what is going on here? Like, all my Black friends are like talking about how they're oppressed.
Yeah.
My white friends are talking about, I literally had like white people like inboxing me on like Facebook, former friends of mine, like in high school, like, I'm sorry, brother, for, you know, all this. And I'm like, what's going on here? Like,
sorry for what? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, don't apologize to me. Like, I don't know what you're apologizing about. Mm-hmm. And so like, I didn't have a philosophy or an ideology to kind of even address some of this stuff mm-hmm. because I'm like holding on to both things, right? In America, you can be whoever you want to, but at the same time, I'm holding on to the white man's out to get you, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, and so I was kind of, I didn't know like what to really, to believe. Vody Baucham was super helpful, you know, with addressing a lot of these things and the cultural, you know, Marxism and cultural, you know, issues that were going on that, I think a lot of people just accept it as true, right? Like you got a lot of these Black people saying, hey, we're being targeted, like, you know, George Floyd, right? Yeah. And all these issues that happen. Like, and so I think white people just like, yeah, Black people are, right? Mm-hmm. In the news saying that. And so, you know, it was a long journey. But as I started to accept, as I started to, I guess, examine some of these things, I started to express that, obviously, on social media, mm-hmm. Which may not have been best, right? Just, but it is what it is, right?
How did you find Vody?
I first knew about Vody just from like Reformed theology and like apologetics. And so, and then I started hearing him talk about some of these social issues, and which, funny enough, Vody got me mad at first when I was first listening to him, because I was like, he's saying Black people aren't oppressed. You yeah. know, he's like, I came from a single, you know, mother household. How dare he say like we're not, yeah, you know, yeah. And it's like, you know, then I started listening more and more. I'm like, well, a lot of these issues are self-inflicted. There's things that bring about these mm-hmm. quote unquote grievances, right? And so it, not to say that there isn't real racism, right? Because that's the first thing people want to say, like, oh, you don't think racism exists? No, it does.
Right.
But everybody can be guilty of racism. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's how I first heard about Vody, was mainly theologically.
And so this is kind of a spicy question I have for you. So I went to I went to the G3 conference this last year, which is a big
I was too.
We probably saw each other and didn't even realize it. So for folks who don't know, like, it's a big Reformed conference, like a huge one. There's all kinds of people there. Vody was there. And I've had some folks ask me, how many Black people were there? Like, how white was it? Because in Reform circles tend to be like very white, right? And I said, actually, you know what? Like, it was a lot more diverse than I thought it would be. Like, it still was majority white. Plenty of Black people were there. Plenty of Latino people were there. I saw Asians, you know, like, it was a good mix. And, you know, Black people might have even been representative. They might have been about 13%. of the crowd, right? And they're 13% of the population. They might even have been overrepresented, maybe. I don't know. And so that even surprised me. But do you think, all that to say, Reformed theology is still sort of seen as the white man's Christianity, but then there's folks like, you know, Virgil Walker and Daryl Harrison and Vodi Bachum, and, you know, there's, you know, figureheads that are Black. Do you think that in order for more Black people to come to understand, practice, and embrace what you consider the correct theology, right? Reformed theology, and I hold this view as well. Does it need to come from Black people? Is Vodi really the only one in the majority of cases who can go speak to Black folks and actually they'll listen to him, as opposed to a John MacArthur or something like that?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, so to back up with your first kind of thought, is Reformed theology, you know, the white man's kind of theology? Well, I think most people in America probably think that about Christianity is in general, you know, unfortunately. But Reformed theology has actually had a very rich, you know, tradition in African, you know, thought, you know, Black churches growing up, where I think of Lemuel Haynes and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Black African Reformed leaders in history. And so I do want to make that known. It's not some kind of thing that's like touch ground in like Black circles like the last 20 years.
Right.
That's definitely not true. But the second question, does it need to come from like a Black person? I don't think so. You know, that kind of is almost like this standpoint epistemology, like, well, we need to have the same experience for me to accept something that's true. I think if that person thinks that way, there's actually a deeper problem that needs to be addressed. You know, well, in order for you to believe the truth, it has to come from somebody that looks like you. Now, are more people willing to first give a listen to someone that looks like them? Probably so. Probably so. And I don't think that's a, you know, I would say this, hey, like, if that's where they're at, maybe we could like address that, you know, and hey, if them hearing Reformed theology is someone that looks like me versus John MacArthur, okay. But then, hey, as we disciple them, let them know that thinking is not correct.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm so thankful for, you know, the white men who have discipled me. I was the guy who discipled me was actually a Black man, but I've also been discipled by older white men. And at the end of the day, they were teaching what the Bible said, you know, it wasn't like you need to think this about Black people or white people. I to me, a lot of these conversations are so minuscule and silly. Like that's what we're, you know, debating about.
But, right. Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully that's kind of my overall view on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I it's hard because I think a good idea and a correct idea is a good, you know, the truth is the truth. Like it doesn't matter who it's coming from. And me, I live in Northern Idaho. Like I grew up in a white area and I've been able to navigate. I make choices based on what I think is truth, but I understand that for whatever reason, however God designed us, it's hard. Like you said, a lot of people do only want to hear it at least at first from someone who they think they have something really critical in common with, when in reality, like if I'm Black and I live in Idaho and you're Black and you live in Florida, we probably grew up in completely different cultures, completely different. Like, what do we really even have in common?
That's right.
I have more in common with the white guy who lives down the street, right? Culturally, a lot of the times.
Right.
And so I'm right there with you. And I actually have, but I have arguments, not arguments, but good debates and conversations with people who are like, why are you free Black thought? Why not just be free thought? And you know, feature heavily, you can feature Black people a lot or whatever, but why does it have to be free Black thought? And a part of that is because I think for whatever reason, a lot of Black people out there don't want to hear it, at least at first, from a Black person. And then, like you said, we'll use that in to be like, look, there's your thinking is incorrect when you only want to hear it from Black people. But now that we have your attention, right, let's talk about this, this, and this, and this. So it's like a fine line that I'm still always wondering if I'm walking it correctly.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I imagine that Thomas Sowell has influenced a lot of young Black thinkers. I mean, as silly as it sounds, just because he's Black and articulate. But you listen to him, it's like, okay, he knows what he's talking about a little bit, you know? It's and so, yeah, it shouldn't be the thing you drive in, right? Like, hey, I'm Black, we're going to win you on just mere blackness alone. Right. But it can be a stepping stone or, hey, a means that, like you said, get people to listen to you for the first time. Right. Because they maybe never really thought about these things, and maybe they wouldn't hear from a white person. Like, they're like, no way am I going to accept it if J-Mac comes in through the doors. But if Votibacle comes, maybe I'll listen. It's like, okay, we can address that down the road.
Right. Yeah. I actually feel that way sort of about Joel Osteen, who I think his philosophy or his theology is totally trash. I'm not a fan of Joel Osteen in any way, shape, or form. However, you know, some people who just say he's sort of like a waste of space. Joel Osteen is kind of the gateway drug for a lot of people. Like they are exposed to, I'm going to say in scare quotes, Christianity. He's not really a Christian in my mind, but they're exposed to the idea of Christianity through Joel Osteen. And then just like you, they go, okay, well, I'm a Christian now. I guess I better start reading my Bible. And then they start reading their Bible and they go, hold on, Joel Osteen is not, I'm not seeing this. You know, so I even think like a person like Joel Osteen, I'm always like, don't underestimate what God can do with someone who's maybe evil, honestly. Like, I don't know what's in Joel Osteen's heart. Like, you know, I don't know the man, but I think he's confusing a lot of people. However, I know many in my small circles, many folks who didn't start thinking about becoming a religious or Christian person at all, except first through Joel Osteen. And then they left. Then they moved past Joel Osteen. They matured and they moved on to better things. But
that's funny. You know, if you know, false doctrine is bad, right? And all this stuff is bad, right? But man, I'm very thankful for my experience growing up in it, because now I feel like it gave me so much more a hatred for it. You know, like, I'm like, I really hate false doctrine, you know, opposed to some people are like, yeah, why do you talk about false doctrine so much? And why do you talk about this so much? I'm like, that's because you've never been in it. Mm-hmm. You know, the person who grew up like, right, getting abused, they hate abuse a lot more than a person who, you know, they may not, they can't sympathize as much, you know, or the person who grew up in single parent home, like, they're like, okay, you're just, at least you had a parent, and it's like, well, you don't actually understand why it was so bad, you know? Mm-hmm. And so as much as I despise false doctrine, it's like, this is kind of this duality of like, man, it actually taught me so much, you know? Yeah. Like, it taught me to truly like despise it and be appreciative for the truth, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Those people that do come through those false doctrine doors, they all tend to be like you, like very, which is, there's a gift in that. Okay, so we'll get a little bit back into kind of your mission and what you're doing at All Things Theology, but let's also dig into like how I actually found out about you, which was like this amazing story that I actually don't know too much about. So it involves you eventually winning a medal from the mayor or something, and you saved a woman's life. And can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, so I'll start from the beginning. I was on my way to work, you know, just driving to work, taking that route every day to work. And, you know, I've taken this route so many times, it just becomes rogue. And like, I'm not even paying attention to the roads by then. And next thing you know, out of the corner of my eye, I just see like just cars moving. I'm like, okay, something happened here. Come to realize it's like three cars just collided with each other. I mean, going 50, 60 miles per hour on this back road. And I get out of the car and check on the first person. He's all right. So I go to the next person, older lady. She's like, shoulders like hurting, but you know, she's still okay, you know. Get her out, and next thing you know, I look to the third car and like the hood of the car is on fire completely. And, you know, it's starting, it's not completely on fire, it's like starting, you know, which already right there is like scary for me, like that's not the way I want to go out, right? But I go to the car, like it won't open. Well, no, the first door is like it opens up like right when I get there. And I like, hey, I'm like 15 feet back, right? I'm at a safe distance just in case something happens. And I yell to the driver, like, hey, can you get out? And I just hear like no, I can't move. I'm like, oh my goodness. I literally got to go in there and help this person.
So you like opened the door and then stepped back? Or what do you
mean? No, she opened the door.
Okay.
Yeah. So the driver opened the door and like the airbags are hanging down. So I can't even see. What I come to realize is a young girl. She was like 18 years old.
Okay.
And funny thing is they were on their way to a funeral, which is like real.
Oh my God.
Interesting considering things, but.
Like these people all knew each other that crashed?
No. Okay. So they're first car, one person in it, second car, one person in it. And then in the second car, the third car that was catching on fire, there were two girls inside.
Okay.
So there's four people involved, three cars. And so, yeah, she's like, hey, I can't get out. And, you know, I was like, all right, I got to go in. I lift the airbags and I mean, her face is just bloody. Ugh. I mean, it come to realize after the fact, she had to get like so many surgeries, literally facial fractures, like 18 facial bones fractured. Like, anyways, so I get her out and I'm like, back crawling like an army, you know,
and she's,
military.
Is she all broken up in like her legs and stuff? Like, why couldn't she move?
I think just shock.
Shock, okay.
The shock of everything. She was like kind of just paralyzed and, you know, and probably having 18 facial fractures probably, you know.
Yeah, maybe she couldn't even see. I don't know.
Yeah. But I get her as far away as the car as I can. And I'm like, you know, you okay? What's going on? You okay? Like, talk to me, you know. And she's like, did you get my friend? And I'm like,
say your friend? Now?
Yeah, exactly. Like, somebody else in the car? And by this time, like, the hood is, like, it is catching. Like, it's that smoke where, like, you'll be coughing and wheezing, like, if you get near it. Well, go to the passenger door and, like, look to the passenger. And she's not even looking at us. She's, like, looking, like, she's dazed, right? Yeah. She's, like, even, like, that blank stare straight ahead. And we kind of get her attention and we were able to get her out of the car fine. And she was fairly okay. I think she just mainly had a concussion, but same thing. She was bleeding as well. But yeah, they had to get airlifted out of there. It was an insane event. And afterwards, after I kind of, you know, the event was over, I'm nearly just passed out. I'm like, you know, just that lightheaded feeling. I literally, my vision started blurring. It was like all that adrenaline dump just hit me.
Yeah.
You know, and, but they were okay, you know.
Did the car blow up or anything?
That car was like disintegrated, you know, it was like completely done. I spoke to the father of the driver and funny enough, he was a former airlift and he was like, I got a picture sent to me and he was like pretty much, in his mind was like, my daughter's gone.
Oh.
Like, he was like already preparing in his mind. He was like, there's no way she should have lived. He's like, I've seen accidents less severe where the people didn't make it. And so just to show you, like the car was like, I mean, it literally just had the metal frame. Like everything else was gone in that car. And like, I mean, it was pretty crazy.
So was it just you pulling the girls out or did other people pull over and help or were you alone?
So by the time I got the second girl out there was another guy who came and helped me with her. But yeah, the first two cars and the driver of the third car, I got out, you know, tried to help and assist them.
Yeah.
I even remember, to me, it was like a crazy thought. Like I was, as it was going on, like cars were like turning around. And to me, that was like a crazy thing. Like, how do you see this and just, never mind. You know, to me, it was like,
yeah,
I don't know. You know, not everybody, I guess, wants to get involved. But to me, it was like no other choice, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And I'm so inspired by that, too. And just in this, I just, when I heard your story and saw it, I just thought, like, this is just so timely, at least for me personally, because lately, and really over the past couple of years, I've just been really kind of hopeless when it comes to the state of manhood. And there's problems with women and stuff too. I'm not trying to say, oh, us ladies, we're doing great. But, you know, men, like you see videos of women like getting robbed in broad daylight or like physically, you know, sexually assaulted and like there's men all around and nobody does anything. And, you know, I get it. Sometimes a man steps in and he ends up getting charged with murder or manslaughter or whatever when he does try to step in and help. And so I get that there is this, I don't know, we just live in difficult times. Sure. But I mean, when it comes to a car being on fire, there's no other like human involved, right? So you'd think that this would be a case where a lot of men would feel safe to step up and be like, I'm going to pull over, I'm going to help. there's only one right answer. There's not a lot of nuance, like get the people out of the cars, right?
Yeah.
But you said really one guy. You had you helped three different cars, and in that time, and four people, only one other man pulled over and helped you.
Yeah. And, you know, after this, I've had time to, like, kind of process kind of my emotions and kind of thought about everything. And, you know, people are like, man, you're a hero. And some of that, that's like that struggle. Like, man, I'm not a hero. Like, you know, because, you know, as I'm going to this, I'm literally thinking of every reason not to go into that fire. You know, I'm scared. I think about my wife. I think about, like, my own self-preservation. I mean, it's enough to not go in to this car.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was that struggle right there.
Did you pause at all? Was there a moment where you sort of stopped and were just like, do I want to take the next step?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's what I'm like. I didn't have this Superman, like, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to save her and whatever happens to me. I was just like, man, there was conflict. You know, I was literally met with conflict of her life, potentially my life. I mean, it's like everything hit me in like, you know, you ever have like 50,000 thoughts, like in literally 1 second.
Right.
Like,
your whole life flashes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like right there that happened. I'm like, I'm going to die. My wife's going to not have a, you know, her husband, you know, it's like all these thoughts hit you. But at the same time, you're like, okay, but this girl has family and, you know, she has loved ones and I just reacted, you know, in that 1 second as I paused. Yes, I did. But I was like, I just got to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would be a bigger coward. I would feel way worse if I just like stood back and was just like, hey, whatever happens to you happens. Yeah. Like I would actually
I'll feel call 911, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like I wouldn't be able to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, I just reacted out of what I mean, hopefully, you know, some sense of compassion that, you know, someone would do the same for me if I was in that car, you know.
Or do the same for your wife, if you'd want a guy exactly. to pull over and help your wife out.
Exactly.
Did the girls even end up with any burns or anything? You like totally saved them from that?
Yeah, they didn't get any burns. Like I said, the driver had quite a few surgeries, you know, because she had the, I think 18 facial fractures or something like that. But I saw her again and one, she didn't remember me, you know.
She didn't,
she doesn't even remember the accident.
Yeah.
Which is insane because you think that would be memorable, but that just shows you how bad the collision was to where she doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she may never remember that. But yeah, it was pretty intense.
Do you still see, you saw her again? Do you keep in touch with them? Are you guys friends now?
Yeah, yeah. We you know, we talked not too long ago and I'll just share this. So the city decided to award me with a life-saving award. Oh, funny enough, it's right here. I didn't even plan this. But right here, I got this award. Well, I got to see her and her father and her mother. It was a pretty emotional experience, you know, time. Mm-hmm. It was very emotional. Just seeing her, you wouldn't have even known she got in an accident. I mean, she looks fine. She, you know, young girl. I mean, there's no, like, facial deformities or anything. You know, as I was presenting this award, you know, the father spoke and, you know, he just broke down and he literally hugged me for like a minute.
Yeah.
And it just let me know that what I did that day was validated by the father of that incident.
So the police show up or whatever and they're interviewing you or, you know, obviously they're probably interviewing anybody, all the witnesses or whatever. And that's how they're discovering like, yo, dude, are you telling me you saved everybody? I mean, how did the city even know to nominate you? Because I know you didn't go and tell them, like, hey, give me an award.
Yeah.
How did that get word spread?
I guess somebody told, you know, of what happened. Yeah, I don't really even know.
Did you get interviewed a bunch of times by the police, or how does that work?
No, just on the scene, you know, they talked to me and, you know, the EMS was talking to me and things like that. And so, yeah, it was just really that day.
Wow.
And then
wow.
I got contacted a few days later from the police and they just told me they wanted to do this award.
Mm-hmm. Did you?
So, yeah.
What did your wife think? Was she proud? I mean, you lived, right? So she's probably actually proud. But was she like, you fool? Why did you do that?
Well, I think it was just shock. Like, I mean, I come home with blood on me. And so she's like, I mean, I didn't just show up with blood. Okay. I called her. Like, I called her and I was like, you won't believe what just happened, you know? And of course she, my wife knew something was wrong because I called. I never call right at that time I'm going to work. Usually I call like right when I, you know, get to work, and I call her, hey, I'm okay. I usually do that every day I go to work, but this was too early. And so she was like,
yeah,
hello, you know? And so she knew something was wrong, and I tell her, and I come home, like, I'm pretty bloody. And I don't know if she ever really like expressed true concern, but more like, I mean, that sounds bad. It was more like she helped me, like, you know, just make sure I was okay. But it wasn't like, yeah, she didn't give me, you're a fool. What were you thinking? She's just like, wow.
Yeah.
It was just like speechless. Like, what do you say?
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things. So, but yeah, she, I definitely encouraged. She was definitely like, wow, that was a great thing that happened. You know, days later, we, you know, talked about it and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's just an amazing story. And, you know, I actually think a lot of men, this is like a theory, that a lot of men daydream about being put into a situation like that, because there's this desire in men to be heroes, you know, to save, to protect. I was in the military for 5 years, and that was totally my impression of so many of these young men that join the military. Like, they're dreaming of an opportunity to prove themselves. And then when those situations do come up, like with you, you know, here's an opportunity. You wanted to be a hero. Here you go.
You're right.
And when a lot of men actually do end up not stepping up, then that haunts them like you said, it haunts them for the rest of their days that they didn't step up when it was time to. And I actually think that some of the problem that we have with culture today is not necessarily like men stepping up, not jumping in to save women out of burning cars and stuff, but just other times where you just need to stand up for truth. You know, you need to stand up and when it comes to the gender ideology and COVID lockdowns and things like that, those were chances for men to be heroes, like everyday heroes, right? Step up and stand up. And a lot of men haven't.
And those are more normative, right?
Right.
Like, let's be honest, like, most of us are not going to even be put in a situation to save someone from a fire. But
exactly.
I would argue one is actually more normative, but more impactful in some sense. Like, the father, right, raising his kids, him teaching his children truth, right, speaking out when there's lies, that's so much more impactful, right? You know, in some sense, right? Like, you leave a life of a legacy, you know, being a good father, being a good husband, being a good person in the community, good neighbor, but good churchman. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the actual true heroes, right? And that should be celebrated. That should be celebrated, you know, celebrated more than it is, you know. But in some sense, our society looks down on a man who just goes out and does his responsibilities and he's not begging for any handouts. Like,
right.
It's almost, in some sense, he's like punished, like for being a hero, right? Yeah. Being a you know, someone, a good role model, right? Because, man, our society, it's people want handouts. People want, they complain about all the stuff they don't have, right? Man, I didn't get this, that, but a man is like, he may recognize there's some things he should be getting, but he's like, at the end of the day, I got to go to work, right? Yeah. I got to feed my family. Mm-hmm. I got to do this. Like, to me, those are the true heroes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I've heard folks theorize that the reason why men have become so weak is that, you know, they're not being tested. Like, there's no major wars right now. Things are going pretty well. But in my mind, we're living in some of the craziest times ever. Like, there's opportunities every day for men to
there's ideological wars.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So there's not wars with battles or battle axes and, like, you know, all that, muskets, right? Mm-hmm. But there's ideological wars that men should be stepping up to. And for the most part, from a large standpoint, men are taking a back seat.
Mm-hmm.
Men are, you know, cowering in fear, are compromising, are, you know, abandoning women, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think about my experience just growing up without a father. Like, my dad should have been there, you know.
Yeah.
A man should have stepped in, you know, and committed to a relationship. But women are having to raise, are, you know, are having to step in a position they shouldn't be stepping up to. So that's hardening women. Women are becoming more men. And so there's so much, like, so much issues at hand that men should be stepping to the plate, but, you know, many are not.
Yeah. Well, God bless you for doing that. And let's talk about the, so you've now you're proving yourself in all these ways, Chris. Like, you've done the physical, like, I will literally save you from a burning car. And then you're in that, you're in the ideological kind of battle space as well. And we talked about how you kind of came about doing your YouTube stuff and Twitter and all that, but can you talk about your website, your podcast, what you're doing with the music? You're doing all kinds of interesting things.
Yeah. So I try to stay busy, you know, that's kind of what I like to do. I like to address things that are going on in the culture, things that are going on in the church. And so I have a YouTube channel, YouTube, K-Dub True. You can check that out. And I address a lot of false teaching in the church, a lot of things that are just problematic from a Christian perspective, you know. And what I try to get people to understand is, or point them back to, is the Bible. The Bible is the guide for the Christian. And even for non-believers, even challenging them on things they maybe they thought about Christianity. Because, yeah, there's a lot of nonsense going on in churches, and I recognize that, and I call it out. But just trying to address different philosophies, atheism, you know, Mormonism. And I try to pretty much, you know, get back on what I know. You know, I think so many times, I think about how, even just how I grew up, like some of the things my mom knew or grandparents knew didn't get passed down to me. You know, it was just kind of almost like, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't teach it, but it just wasn't taught. You know, and some of those things you have to learn on your own, which is fine. But if you know it, why not share it? And so that's what I try to do on my YouTube channel. And
do you consider yourself to be like an apologist, or how do you describe when you say you make Christian content? What, how do you describe it?
Yeah. So I would consider every Christian an apologist, right? Right. Because the Bible tells us all, right, to defend the faith, right? And so, yeah, I'm an apologist, but so is the person watching this. So is the the housewife. So is the stay-at-home mother. You know, the Christian faith isn't for the people who know the most things. It's for everybody, right? And so, and that's what I try to encourage people too. Like, hey, you might be a grandmother, 80 years old, kind of, okay, I need to learn some stuff, you know. I try to be accessible to everybody, right? And so, like, okay, you're, because there's kids who watch my channel, which that's the biggest blessing to me. Like, when someone's like, my 9-year-old watches your channel on their free time, I'm like, that's why I do it.
Praise God.
To me, that's the biggest blessing. Or someone in my church, they're like 70 years old. They're like, I was watching your channel the other day, and this is what, I was like, you were watching my channel? Like, to me, that's like a blessing. Man, they're actually. And so, yes, we go deep into some theological things, but I try to break that down in a very succinct way to, like, if a 9-year-old, I keep that in mind. If a 9-year-old was listening, would they be able to grasp this, you know? And so, not that they may grasp everything, right? But at least giving them a foundation. And so that's kind of, that's my heart right there. And so, especially having a newborn, you know, that's, I definitely want to pass some of those things on to him. You know, he doesn't understand what I'm talking about right now, but I'm getting into metaphysics and, you know, epistemology with him. And he's like,
Yeah. And it's crazy. I mean, I have three little ones. And, you know, of course, we can always do better with fellowship, like with discipling in the home and doing family worship time and all that. Definitely, we're always trying to improve and be honest with ourselves. Are we approaching this the right way? That's just the joys of being a parent, always doubting yourself. The other day, my daughter was playing. She's 3 years old. She's 3 and a half. And she was playing and she just started singing to herself, God is in the details. God is in the details. That's not a song that we've listened to. That's not a poem I've told her. I've never told her God is in the details. Like I've, and there are songs and stuff that say such, but we haven't, she doesn't know them to my knowledge. She never listened to them with me. We've listened to other hymns and things. And she started singing that. And my husband and I were just like, whoa, you know, you just, what they pick up on is crazy.
Kids are little sponges. And even though you haven't shared that, you've probably shared that God is in the little things. And in her 3-year-old mind, she conceptualized that as God is in the details, right? Yeah. And so they'll, you know, children will correlate things, you know, mm-hmm. not that mm-hmm. always the correlation is true, yeah. but right. But it's amazing. You know, I'm around a lot of kids just because, you know, there's a lot of kids at our church, and to see what these kids can know at five because of a parent instilling, you know, instilling and literally being there is amazing, which it even verifies the importance of a mother and father being in the home, mm-hmm. you know, being intentional mm-hmm. with them. And so to hear that, I'm encouraged that, you know, you and your husband are instilling.
I honestly didn't even know she knew the word details. So even that was a shock. Like, she knows the word details?
And using it in the right context, yeah. right?
Yeah, it was crazy. She also used a swear word the other day in the right context. Okay, well, so, you know, you it happens both ways. It wasn't like a really bad one. And it was like one of those situations where we almost laughed because she used it so perfectly. But then everybody was like, who swore around? Where did she get this from? Like, exactly. I'm calling my mom. Did you swear around the kids? Anyways, they pick up everything.
They do.
So can you actually define what is Reformed theology? Like, what do we mean when we say that?
Yeah, great question. So there are some nuances that some people may, you know, differ, right? For some people, Reformed theology is linked to you know, Presbyterianism. I'm a Reformed Baptist. And so I would essentially hold that Reformed theology is centered around the five solas. Mainly the hinge point being sola scriptura. That is ultimately what separates us versus Roman Catholics, right? The Bible is the sole infallible rule of faith. There is no other infallible rule. As great as pastors are, they are not infallible. Mm-hmm. As great as parents are, right? We're not infallible, maybe as much as we think we are, but and the sovereignty of God in all things. God, in his wisdom, is literally just meticulously controlling all things. Even our faith, God granted that, you know. It wasn't because one day we woke up and, oh yeah, the evidence is makes sense and, you know, this is why God exists. And God literally gave faith. I literally was not searching for God, you know. I would argue, as in Romans 3, no one was seeking God. No one seeks God. That's what the Bible says. And so in order for someone to have faith, God has to grant that supernaturally. And so I would say sola scriptura is the foundation, and then the sovereignty of God is like the hinge point, just controlling God being a supernatural controller of all things that happen on earth and in man's heart, right? I mean, even the bad things that happen, not that God is the author of evil, but he's in control of it.
Right.
You know? And so this is very difficult for so people, especially I think in our humanistic age where pull ourselves by our bootstrap, right, Christianity, yeah. You know, like, yeah, you know, well, the reason this happened was because I did it, you know, and it's like, no, you know, you read the Bible. And I remember when I first came to these truths. So like I said, I do music. So Shylin was like, I don't know if you know who Shylin is, but he's a Christian rap artist. And I remember listening to his music and like, he was heavy on these things, on these emphasis. Mm-hmm. And I remember like hearing it for the first time, like him talking about predestination and things like this. And I was like, whoa. Like, and so when I read the Bible, I'm like, wait a second, I'm literally seeing this everywhere. Why have I not been taught this? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I was kind of mind blown with that, with the idea of predestination, that God has predestined his people for salvation, yeah. You know?
What is in your bio on Twitter or X, I guess I should call it? It's, you say you're a boom Baptist. What does that
that's,
mean?
That's a play on words from like boom bap. So boom Baptist, you know, that's just me being silly, I guess.
Well, actually on the, you know, you mentioned music and you just touched on it now. What kind of music projects are you doing?
So I actually just released a project not too long ago. It's called Social Distortion, and it's actually addressing a lot of cultural issues that even I think people who aren't Christian will find interesting, and especially if they're conservative, they would like. Obviously, you know, I give my Christian, you know, take on some of these things, but yeah, it's a project really addressing a lot of the culture things that's going on, from, you know, transgender, homosexuality, you know, COVID stuff that was happening. And mm-hmm. yeah, I just address it from a Christian worldview.
What kind of music do you make?
Yeah, I do rap, try to sing a little, you know, it's not that impressive, but yeah, but mainly rap.
And so when you met the gentleman who discipled you way back in the day, did he, was he a rap artist too, or was he a musician and he wanted to like back you up, or how did that work?
Yeah. He was doing rap as well. Mm. So yeah.
Do you still talk to him? Do you guys keep in touch?
Every now and then. Yeah. It's, you know, funny enough, some of the ideological differences in like the woke stuff kind of splintered the relationship a little bit, but I will always still be appreciative of some of those foundational things he taught me.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, did he consider himself reformed, or was he just a Bible believing Christian than the folks at the church you were going to at the time?
Funny enough, we both started to come. So he didn't know, like, there was no like systematized reformed theology, but a lot of the things he were teaching me were consistent with reformed thought, so we both kind of like knew there was a name for it. Like, and I was like, hey, have you heard of this? And it's like, no, I was like, well, that's kind of like what you were teaching me about this, you know? And so, yeah. So he didn't know it by name until later.
Okay. Okay. That's so you guys kind of actually went on a journey together.
Like, yeah. That's kind of pretty much.
And that actually just shows like, you know, people who teach say like, I'm learning too, but like, it's true, you know, when you disciple someone else, you end up, and I'm learning that as like we're starting to homeschool my daughter and stuff, like I'm learning just as much. We're doing our Bible verse memorization, and I'm like, I'm also memorizing these Bible
verses. Because, you know, people who are getting discipled, they ask them, many times they'll ask them questions where you're like, let me get back to you, you know, like, I gotta think about that some more.
Yeah. And
especially with children. You know,
yes,
so.
Yes. And I was on the other end, like when I didn't come to faith till I was in my mid-20s as well. And I remember I just had a friend who was my age who was kind of helping me through it. And I would ask him questions. And one of the things that was amazing about him is that when I went into college, I lived in a house with everybody went to church except for me. But when I would ask them questions and like watch their lives, they didn't seem like they were either living a Christian life, or if I asked them about the Bible, they didn't know, you know, they weren't really reading their Bibles, or, and they were just kind of like, you know, and this friend of mine that I met later, he would actually say, let me get back to you if I asked him a tough question, and then he would get back to me, you know, a day or two later, he'd be like, okay, you asked me about this. So I went and looked in my Bible and I, you know, did a little searching, or he'd say like, I found this book that specifically addresses your question. I had never had that before in my life. And it wasn't a turnoff that he didn't know the answer to the question. The turnoff was when people didn't know the answer and then they just let me continue to be lost, you know, and they didn't, but he was like, I'm not sure of the answer. I will find it and I will help you find it yourself.
Yeah. No, that I agree. You know, one of the things I had to deal with when I was when I first became a Christian was you know, I was living publicly in sin. It was no question. My family knew what I was doing, you know, partying and the immorality lifestyle I was in, and no one ever really said anything to me. And, you know, when I first came a Christian, I was very upset at that, because I was like, if I would have died, I'd go straight to hell. You guys knew what I was doing, like, and nobody said nothing to me. Honestly, when I became, I was just like angry about a lot of things. Cause I was just like, you didn't do this. You didn't tell me this. And it's like, y'all were teaching me false stuff. And like, it was just like, I had to like, you know, forgive in my heart. Right.
That,
you know, a lot of them were ignorant too, you know, but yeah, that it can't, man, you know, I understand that, you know, it's like, man, it's like, why nobody said anything to me, you know? So that, I think that's why I'm pretty like, even though I'm like, if it was up to me, I would stay in my house all day and just like make videos. Right. Like, or just being in my house. I'm such a homebody, but I do believe that God gave me a spirit of like, you got to say something, you know, I don't know. I just couldn't like just see something false, or like, hey man, my good friend over here, he's on his way to hell, but hey man, I love you. I'm not going to say anything to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I just would be eaten up too much to just stay silent. And so I think that's just like part of my ministry. Just say something.
You know? Right. And there's some issues. There's some stuff in my life where I know that like a problem is coming and it's going to put me in like a awkward position where I'm going to have to call something out or say something uncomfortable to a friend that they're not going to want to hear. Or I can think of once situation specifically where my husband and I are just like bracing for, we're like, are we going to lose this friend when we have these hard conversations? Like, we're really dreading it. But then we think Jesus died on the cross.
Exactly.
And I'm nervous about having a conversation. And he was nailed to the cross.
Priorities.
And then you got to repent for that. Like, oh gosh, sorry. Sorry that I'm hesitating. But
because naturally I'm very like, no confrontation. Like, no. Like, that's naturally who I am. Naturally, I'm a coward, right? I'm not like, you know, Hercules and I'll go in there and I'll confront them. And that's naturally, hey, man, as long as you're not doing it to me, I ain't going to say anything, you know, that's naturally who I am. Mm-hmm. And so, but you know, when I became a Christian, like, it's like, God's like, you're a coward, you know, and cowards will not inherit, you know, the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's, you know, we have to be, especially in this age, you know, bold, but that boldness doesn't come from us. You know, it comes from, you know, transcendence, you know, from God himself. And that's, you know, that's, we could do all sorts of stuff, talk about all sorts of things, but that's why like atheism, you know, it's just like, you're literally, it's just you know, in atheism, it's, you got to deal with all your problems and like your faults. And it's, I don't know. I just, I don't understand how atheists live in this life without, without relying on God. God's still there, you know, regardless if they want him there or not, you know. So yeah.
I think too that I realized this pretty recently, and you can probably relate, as I'm naturally an introvert as well, but I think I have a reputation. People think I like confrontation, I like conflict because I speak out on things. And actually, like, I get a pit in my stomach when I send the tweet or do whatever, just like, you know, you might not realize that. And people say, oh, you seem to like confrontation. And no, I don't like confrontation. And but then I realized, actually, I am avoiding confrontation. What I'm avoiding is confrontation with God. Mm. That's what I'm trying to avoid. I'll have confrontation with y'all. I don't want confrontation with God. That's like who I'm very concerned about.
I'll get the smoke from y'all, but not God.
So in a way, they're actually right, right? You don't.
That's a good perspective. I like that.
Yeah. Ultimately, he's the one that I'm concerned about. But okay, we're at about an hour now. So I'm going to hit you with the 10 speed round questions and then give you a chance to get any final thoughts off your chest, plug anything, promote anything, talk about anything you want to talk about before we close out here. And I'm great on time. So as long as you want to take after those 10 questions, it's fine by me. But are you ready for your speed round? The goal is just to answer them as quick as you can. Half the guests do not get through it quickly. So, I mean, this is a free for all.
Let's get it.
Question number one, Black or African American?
Oh, man. Do I got to pick one? I'll say this. I would prefer Black.
Okay. Do you think BET serves a worthwhile purpose?
No. No, not at all.
Should the United States keep daylight savings time?
Yes.
Is Rachel Dolezal a bad person or misunderstood?
I think she's confused herself.
Is there a difference between being happy and being joyful?
Absolutely.
Are you afraid of ghosts?
No.
What's a movie you like that got bad audience reviews? Like, everyone else hated it, but you loved it.
Oh, man. So I don't keep up with a lot of the movie reviews. So I'll just tell a movie I like.
Okay.
It probably did get a lot of bad reviews, but Life of Pi. I love Life of Pi, but most people I talk to don't like the movie.
Have you read the book?
I have not.
Okay. So I've read the book. I've never seen the movie, though. So I can't make a comparison. Love the book. The book's awesome, though. The book is not like the author is not a Christian. I'll say that. Okay. But it's still good. Like, it's still an enjoyable book. Anyways, where is there systemic racism in America?
Oh, I would say when it comes to abortion.
Yeah. Okay. Who is the most beautiful woman in the world?
Oh, hands down, my wife.
Good answer. And finally, should election day be made a national holiday?
No, I think most of it is celebrity based anyway, so no.
There you go. All right, you got through the 10 questions pretty quickly. Boom. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with our audience?
Yeah, I want to share that I am a recent father of a young boy. Me and my wife adopted. And so one of the most proud things I am right now, this moment, is waking up, seeing him, coming off the, get off the work, seeing my boy. You know, growing up without a father, you know, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of, I never seen this. How will I do it? You know, mm-hmm. and still there's a little like, cause like when I was, you know, we were about to adopt him, I spoke to a lot of fathers and that I was like, man, how is it? Like, you know, those questions, you know, you're asking in fear, right? Like,
how is it?
Man, they're like, man, bro, I'm still failing. Like, I'm still figuring this out. And so like that was a lot of comfort to speak to other men who, had, you know, multiple children. And so to me, like, I really take fatherhood seriously because, you know, I didn't have a father. And by the grace of God, my son will never be able to say that.
Yeah. Like,
my father was always there. We did stuff. He taught me things. He cared for me. And so, like, it's a real special moment. And, you know, I think about even the things I'm doing now, even to, you know, this life-saving award. Hopefully, by the grace of God, my son will be proud of me.
Yeah.
You know, just real special. You know, I love that boy.
And so what was the adoption? How did you guys do foster? How did you adopt?
No, we did the sign your life away, spend a lot of money adoption.
Okay. Okay.
It was very expensive, but, you know, he's worth it. You know, yeah, we had a desire. We've always had a desire to adopt, but we felt like financially we were in a position to actively pursue that. And we just went for it. We really just went for it. And funny enough, the financial side was actually the easiest side.
Hmm.
Dealing with, you know, so much of the adoption agency is so woke. It was like,
oh, yeah.
It was like cringy hearing some of the stuff they were like saying. And I was like,
yeah, I've been seeing people being like rejected for being foster parents or adoption because they're Christians, because they're like, no, we're not going to affirm, you know, if our 5-year-old wants to transition or whatever. Did you have that experience?
So they were, this was an actual, Christian institution.
Okay.
And they weren't, okay, when I say woke, they weren't like left liberal, like mm-hmm. all the way, you know, but some of the like racial stuff, they were pretty like woke about. And funny enough, I had to address it because they asked about it and we had like a meeting about it. And I was just like, yeah, I kind of feel like a second class human when you refer to me as another race. So I hold to like, we're all one race, just different ethnic groups, you know?
Yeah. Wait, so I'm assuming like your child doesn't have African heritage or something? Was that the problem?
He's interracial, mm-hmm. but it's funny, like they gave like this whole, so like they send you through all this training, right? You have to take all this training and all the interracial information was about white people adopting black people, but never about black people adopting mm-hmm. a white person. And so I was like, it kind of seems like this is one way, one sided.
Yeah.
You know, like it's all directed at white people. You know, yeah. if they want to. And then, like, you know, it almost made black people seem like they were more difficult to deal with because, like, they had this conference we had to go to. It was like a 2-day conference, like in Alabama. And
wow, that's a lot. You had to go to a conference?
We had
to adopt a baby? Whoa.
It was a lot of, I feel like, unnecessary stuff, but it is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, they had these, like, I guess these testimonials, right? The mm-hmm. people who've adopted interracially. And it was so fun. To me, I'm laughing, right? But at the same time, I'm like, this is kind of sad. You got all these white people like talking about how hard it was to get out of their comfort zone and
yeah.
raise a black person and like give them the interest they want, right? And go to a black barber. And it was like,
it's always the hair, right? Like, oh my God, yeah. I had to learn how to do different hair. It's like, oh, boo hoo, first world problems.
It is always the hair. Right. And then like my life was so white, I had to literally move out of I wanted them to say ghetto, but they didn't say it. But I had to move out of the suburbs to a more diverse area. And I'm just like, oh, my goodness. Hush, lady. Like I wanted to go to her and I'm like, what you did was actually so wrong. Like you literally left the good in your life. Because like one of the things was like, I had to get him black mentors. The whole time I'm thinking like, why didn't you just give him good mentors?
Right.
Like, right. you're so concerned about this, having a black person in their life. Pick the best mentor. I don't care if he's Asian, like, Hispanic, like, Vietnamese. Like, to me, I'm like, listen to all this stuff. And I'm like, like, is anybody else having a problem? I'm like literally going crazy at the table. Like, we're at, there's another black couple, like, yeah. I'm like, oh my goodness, no. I tried to talk with them, but I was like, never mind. But so some of the training I just felt like was, and so when, you know, they do the like survey and I thought it was anonymous. They were like, what do you think is wrong with this? And like, I was like, I went off. Right. And so a few days later we get an email like, hey, we would like to talk to you about some of the training. I was like, oh my goodness. And my wife's like, look what you got us into. Right. And so
did they argue with you or did they listen to your critique and say, okay, we get you?
They listened and they were very receptive. Will anything change? I don't know.
Yeah.
But at least they got to see, at least they'll be like, no, we heard from someone who was thoughtful, right, not unhinged, right, not going crazy, right?
Yeah.
But at least addressed it from like, okay, you know, and what was helpful was like, you know, this is a Christian organization, so I got to come from a biblical perspective and share biblically why I didn't think these things were helpful. And, you know, to discuss some things in the culture that are going on is like, see, here's why I don't think what you're saying is good, you know, in a softball way, you know, say that. But no, they were very helpful. But like, yeah, going through some of the training, me and my wife were like, ugh.
Yeah.
This is so lame. You know, this is so weird, you know, like, cause it was mostly directed at my wife, but me, I'm like exempt. Like,
yeah. Like, oh, you can do whatever you want, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. Like it's funny. So white people, right, have to inundate black children with more black people. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But black people adopting a white person, just keep living your normal life. Right. Just, so it's like, I'm like, look at the hypocrisy, like, you know, you're sharing with people. So it's like, it almost, like I said, you know, hearing the testimonials, hearing the training, you come with the perspective that a white person adapting a black person is just extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do this, then you need to literally consider so much of your life rather than like, hey, no, we're going to bring you in our home. You're going to do things. We're going to introduce you to a variety of stuff. Guess what? Just like we would do if you were naturally ours.
I mean, right.
You know, and so it just makes it like, I can't imagine being a naturally, like, let's say, you know, white couple, right? They have kids on their own. Then they, you know, feel like God, they want to adopt, right? And they adopt a black child. And literally treating you, right? What do you do? You give like, your white person, you know, the asparagus rice, and you got to give the black kid like the chicken and like the water. I can't imagine growing up in this home like with those differences. Like, I would literally feel like I was a different human being.
Right, right. And like, it's weird too that they think like that is culturally you're like born with. If you adopt a baby, they don't know what black culture is. They don't know what white culture is. They don't know what any culture is. They're going to know your family culture because they're a part of your family. Now, if you adopt an older child and they like legitimately are from Africa or something, then I could see you trying to keep them in touch with some of their roots. But when you're adopting a baby, I don't get it. Like, make it make sense.
Yeah.
They don't know. They don't have a culture. You're giving them their culture.
Right. Yeah. I'm your culture. Like, look, I'm going to introduce you to things that I like, because one, they're not white or black. They're what I like, so, hey, look, I like music. It's, you know, rap music is like whatever. Right. I you know, I'm gonna give you the Bible. I'm gonna give you, I like working out. So I'm going to introduce my kids to a plethora of things. And guess what? When they become mature, they can decide what they want to take from me and what they don't want to take from me. And I don't have this ideology of, I'm going to introduce you black culture, right? Yeah. And you need to stick within that frame. Like, to me, you're actually doing something terrible for that kid because you're only introducing that kind of one little, let's be honest, what you think is a monolith for black culture. Because let's be honest, most of the stuff you don't, most black people probably aren't doing it. You know, it's just like you've, they're actually stereotypes that you're actually introducing your children to. And, you know, I just felt bad. I wanted to talk to this lady and kind of just tell her, it's okay if you introduce them to more white people. Like, I just wanted to tell her that, like, they will be okay.
She's like, we were listening to too much classical music, and so I had to get Tupac records. It was awful, but I did it because I love my kid.
I did it because I love him. You know, now, you know, he's thugging it out now and sagging his pants. But, you know, I want the culture, you know, for the culture, right? And so you're like, how are you guys literally? And to me, I think, I don't know, maybe this is just like, even if maybe this is the stubbornness in me. I'm like, I'm not about to change my life for you. Like, you're going to do what I do, right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'm not going to flip my life upside down, move to a whole city just for the potentiality of you, I guess, being a normal kid. Like, you don't even know what normal is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I will tell you what's normal. Homeschool, like, all this. You know, and so, to me, I really felt bad for this lady, you know. And there were multiple people. There was, like, a man up there, too. And they were, like, in tears. And,
oh,
like,
my gosh.
Of, like, looking at my wife, like, look what they're in tears about. How hard it is to raise a Black kid. I'm like, do y'all hear y'all selves? Like,
they don't.
You're literally talking about how bad it is to be a adopted mother of a Black kid. And you're up there in tears. Like, yeah. Like one thing that offended me was, like, I'm not saying she regretted it, but she was like, you know, if I could do this all over again, I'd have some she didn't say second thought. She was like, I'd think more deeply about this. And it almost sounded like she was saying, I don't know if I would adopt, knowing what I know now about Black kids. And I was just like, man, that was actually what saddened me the most about that.
Yeah. And they think that they're actually heroes too, right? Like it's like there's some narcissism or something to it. Like, look at me. Like, I took on this challenge of raising a Black kid, even though I'm white or whatever. It's very bizarre and twisted, but also hilarious in a dark way.
Yeah, it is. That's me. I try to find the humor in the most non-humorous things, but, you know, because she was like talking about some of the hard things, right? Obviously the hair was like the huge one, but like going to a football game and standing out because I have a Black adopted kid, and part of me wanted to adopt a white kid just to be like, I don't know, troll people. Yeah. Like, maybe the second one, we will adopt the white kid. But like, to me, I'm like, he looks just like me, don't you think? You know, like, silly, like, because I'm like, y'all are worried about the wrong thing,
right?
Who cares if they obviously know they're adopted, whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't. The kid's glad that they're adopted, not in the system. Like, exactly. That's what matters. But, oh, okay, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. This was a fun episode, especially for me, being a fellow Reformed Christian myself. And I hope people will check out your website, your socials. We'll include that in the show description, so the links will all be there for people. Thank you for coming on, and God bless you.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to the Free Black Thought Podcast.